Welcome back to the A-List. Today, we're joined by someone whose story spans across continents and stages. A leader who began speaking at the age of 10, published her first poetry book at 14, and has since become a powerful voice in executive coaching and organizational transformation. As a co-founder of Impact Plus Consulting and a certified executive coach, she's helped leaders and teams communicate with clarity, navigate conflict, and build culture rooted in trust, collaboration, and lasting impact. I personally have utilized her services in the past, and I'm fortunate to be able to learn from someone as experienced and talented as Precious. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Brandon.
So we'll start things off with just some kind of warm questions. I know a lot about your background, but I'd love for the audience to learn a little bit more about what made Precious Precious. And you are Precious.
Thank you. And so are you.
So we share a common starting point at SFU. Do you remember what drew you to SFU? And what is something perhaps memorable about that experience that shaped who you are?
That's a great question. So first of all, I didn't choose SFU. I had gotten a scholarship, and so the scholarship body chose SFU. Specifically, I was born and raised in Nigeria. And through that, I was very, you know, honored to get a scholarship, a four-year undergraduate scholarship. I think it was worth of $120,000 at the time, to study at Fraser International College. And then it was through my journey at Fraser International College for a year that I then transitioned to SFU, Simon Fraser University.
Well, Canada's lucky to have attracted you in that way. Now, you did grow up in Nigeria. So what are some people or experiences that shaped you in those early years that helped you become the leader you are today?
Yeah, I guess I would sort of localize it a little bit to growing up in my family. I have about 11 siblings. I have a twin brother, so about a family of what, 12 children. And I think when you start to sit at a dinner table at some point, you have to find your voice and find a way to communicate your perspective and your ideas while still being heard, especially as somebody who is the last of 12 in my family. And so through that experience, I really learned the value of integrity from my father and mother. I also learned the importance of speaking up when there is injustice. And I also learned the importance of faith as a driver to stay grounded and composed regardless of what the circumstances are. So I would say very much my growing up in Nigeria is very much shaped by my family values. And that really helped shape who I am today. I would say, I guess, if we're zooming out in terms of the macro context in Nigeria, one of the things we'd often hear from somebody who's grown up in Nigeria is that Nigeria really forces you to be resilient, to be that person who takes risk. And I think in the world of leadership, you can't really navigate or survive as a leader without taking risk, without stepping outside of your comfort zone. And that's what's really helped me thrive as a leader today.
Yeah, well, you know, globally there's issues, and Nigeria certainly has gone through its share of ups and downs. Now, you have been a public speaker since an early age. So you talked about faith, you talked about family, and those sort of shaping your early years. What kind of put you into the spotlight in those early years?
You know, it's really interesting because when I was growing up, I started writing, right? So I was writing poetry. And I had this teacher specifically who was a literature teacher, and he would invite us to write poems. And he would say to my colleagues, write one poem, and he would say to me, Precious, you're going to write five. And so he gave me five times the pressure that other people would have experienced when it came to literature and writing and using one's voice. And through that experience, I sort of realized that you can't really walk through the world without using your voice and using it for good. And that experience just really allowed me to attend youth events or church conferences or leadership events or summits where I was either competing at a sort of a regional level in Nigeria or in Nigeria or the local state level. And through that process, I realized that people listened. Not so much because I just wanted to speak, but it was more because I was saying something that really mattered to the audience. So those early experiences have really helped shape who I am as a speaker. And today, as an executive coach, I'm really excited an honor that I get to work with leaders and teams who are also looking to find their voice and own it.
Yeah, that says a lot, right? I think there's people who have power or have positions of influence, but may have just ended up there because of, you know, years of service. But when it comes time to actually inspire action and speak passionately,
yeah,
not everyone, even myself at times, is able to do that. And so certainly having someone coach and support along the way who genuinely cares, I think that's a big reason why people listen to you. And I've heard your talks previously, is you're so authentic in the way you communicate, and you are listening to the audience's verbal cues or visual cues throughout the presentation, which most of us, I think, can learn from.
Yeah, I love that you touched on this idea of authenticity, and I'll just kind of nudge a little further there. I think authenticity is powerful when you can show up as your authentic self. I think, though, that the hallmark of great leaders and great storytellers and communicators is adaptive authenticity. And the reason I use the word adaptive authenticity is because sometimes when we're just being ourselves, it's not always useful to the audience or the room that we're in. And the power of being adaptive with our authenticity is you're still staying true to who you are, but you're adapting to the needs of the people in front of you. For example, one of the things that I learned from researching things around communication and authenticity comes from the work of Dr. Hermine Ibarra. And she talks a lot about this idea that leaders can't just be authentic in a way that condemns them to not grow and expand themselves. And I think that that's the power in adaptive authenticity when you communicate, is that you're constantly reading the room, discerning when to speak, when to be silent, and what is it that are pain points for your audience that they really want to hear about or they want solved.
Let's pull that thread a little bit, Precious, because there may be, you know, a presentation to a group of 15, or there may be a keynote presentation to 100.
Yeah.
Like, how can you do that in a setting like that where there's perhaps just so many people, you can't really, you know, read everyone's body language?
It's a great question. So one of the things I often say to leaders when I'm coaching leaders is oftentimes people focus too much on the crowd. We forget that a presentation is not for a crowd. A presentation is for a person. There are still individuals in the crowd. And so whenever I'm crafting a talk, I imagine three personas of people. First, the persona who perhaps already knows what I'm about to talk about, is already on board. We call it preaching to the choir. The second is the person who is unsure. You're not quite sure whether to believe in what I'm about to talk about. And maybe the third person might have resistance or a completely different point of view. And you want to connect with these personas of people. Now, of course, people move and dance regardless of where they are in that, what I would call a spectrum of persuasion. But what really matters is actually just saying out loud that there are different people in the room and you might have different points of view, and then addressing each of those objections and concerns that they might have. I think where leaders make a mistake is often assuming that everyone is like them or agrees with them or has the same point of view. And then they miss to welcome opposition as an opportunity for connection. And I think that's really where you can actually speak to every single person in the room by thinking through these different personas of people in the audience.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting, because there's maybe demographic differences, there may be geographic differences where people are speaking virtually through that medium versus an in-person presentation. So Precious, you talked a little bit about injustice. I'm curious about perhaps some of the areas that you focused on in the past, and how might you inspire others to speak up or participate in the decision-making process when there's so many issues today?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to answer that question, it would make sense for me to share what I thought my career was going to be before I became an executive coach. So growing up, I thought I was going to be a lawyer, specifically a human rights lawyer. And as you know, being a human rights lawyer, there is always some form of an injustice. And specifically, I'll use the context of Nigeria, where I grew up. I was always very concerned about people not having economic access. So the difference between the rich and the poor, how do you sort of make that connection? How do you help people rise out of poverty? or in other instances where there are issues around access to education. For me, that felt like an issue of justice, right? And over time, I sort of realized that I wanted to pursue a career in dialogue. So I went to school and I went back to do my master's in community development because I was really curious about working with organizations and thinking about things in terms of the systems that create those injustices. And specifically, that process really awakened in me the desire to work with young people to be involved in policymaking. So for example, I served as a not-for-profit director on the board of City High Vancouver, which is a local not-for-profit that really gets young people involved in policy. And as I went through that experience, I realized that for me, speaking up is not just about speaking up for my own objective. The idea really was to move forward something that could create greater good in society. And that was why I focused on using policy as a platform for engaging young people. So if I were to kind of translate that to a leader in using their voice for something or someone beyond themselves, for me, the question comes down to Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. Every single thing we do as leaders, I think, could be grounded or should be grounded in a sense of purpose. Why should people care? Why should you care? And what impact or difference would it make if you cared or if we cared? And I think that once there's some clarity and alignment on that sense of purpose, the story that you choose to tell, the moment you choose to speak up, and where you choose to use your voice becomes more aligned to that sense of why.
I love that. You're the third guest to speak about Simon Sinek. So Start With Why and Leaders Eat Last, two books that every aspiring leader or leader should be reading. Lots to unpack there, Precious. What I would say is that whether you've grown up in a rural community, whether you've grown up in a city, whether you've grown up in many different places, we all should be sharing our thoughts and opinions. Because I think increasingly with digital media bombarding us on a regular basis, the individual sometimes loses their drive to share their own perspective if they don't already have, you know, thousands of followers online or they already have a position of influence. So what would you say to someone who has an opinion and is trying to determine how they should get more active in perhaps policy decision making?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, my first thought is check that your opinion is informed. Because there's a lot of opinions out there. There is no lack of opinion. The question is it an informed opinion? And then secondly, are you flexible or adaptable with your opinion? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I really love about Adam Grant's work, he talks a lot about organizational behavior and organizational culture. Mm-hmm. And he really encourages leaders to really hold their opinions lightly. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some vulnerability in that, in recognizing that we're not always right. And so I think that that space of really taking a step back to ask, why am I sharing this opinion in the first place, really matters. The second part of it is, I also want to acknowledge that some leaders may feel a sense of self-doubt. So give an example. I've coached leaders who've said to me, Precious, there are so many people already talking about this topic. Why should I add to the noise? Or why should I add my voice when they're already established experts in the space? Mm-hmm. And I'd love to use an example that a friend shared with me when I was thinking of getting back into writing as an author. She said to me, Precious, why are you worried that there are so many people who are already talking about public speaking? So I had to kind of take my own medicine. She said, there is Coke and then there is Pepsi. There is a Coke audience and there's a Pepsi audience. And it's really important to recognize that they might be from the same underlying brand, but very different tastes. And so imagine then that your audience has different needs, different tastes, different preferences, and different life experiences that you as a leader, you have something to offer and to connect with what they need. And so when you're in that space where you're questioning whether your voice matters, you're doubting whether you have something of value to offer, or you're even questioning your credibility, your expertise, or your credentials, know that there is an audience that is designed for you that really wants to hear what you have to say.
I love that. Find your people, right?
Yes.
Whether you're, you know, the Tony Robbins, you know, 10,000, 100,000 stage person, or whether you're speaking to a group of 10 people in your local community, both are fulfilling a need. And I think more often than not, our generation, perhaps, because we're so focused on meeting our financial objectives or doing well at work, we sometimes don't have the time or energy to get involved in our local community and the decision-making process, which that's a bit of a scary thought.
It can be, actually. What I would say, though, is there's a time for everything. I recall you and I even discussing this idea of, at some point when we first graduated some years back, we had the time, or the luxury of time,
yes,
to get involved and get engaged.
Yes.
And now in a different stage of life where it's really about building, you know, a business or an organization or a family, that really sort of changes your level of commitment or your capacity. So I think it's really important to recognize what is your current capacity, and then within that, how much you align your gifts and your strengths to that capacity in the season that you're in. I think we ebb and flow across different seasons, mm-hmm, and it's also important to not burn out in the process of serving, because that's the other side of it, that when we overserve, in quote, we can lose ourselves.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, whether you're active in your church or whether you're a volunteer in the community, particularly mm-hmm, for those maybe in their 20s and early 30s who have not started a family, have not started a business, they may have that time to commit and get engaged in the civic process or with their local nonprofits. You know, you and I, we were quite involved in a number of different nonprofits over the years. Now, let's tie it back to maybe your personal leadership journey. So when did you realize that you enjoyed leading, and do you see yourself as being more of an extrovert or an introvert?
So when did I realize that I enjoyed leading?
Yeah.
And then do I see myself more as an introvert or an extrovert?
Correct, yeah.
That's a great question. You know, when I first started my leadership journey, I didn't necessarily think of myself as enjoying leadership, quite frankly. I was more the sort of quiet person. And most people might not even believe that today, because I'm always speaking and I'm out there. However, if you were to ask, you know, my friends back from what we call primary school, like kindergarten, they would say Precious was the quiet person in the class who rarely spoke. Hmm. What I realized is that leadership found me, and I had to at some point decide to answer that call of leadership. Whether it was things where there was a project at work and a former boss would say, Precious, you know, you've got the skills to do this work. And somehow I found myself just finding challenges to solve, because whenever I noticed that young people needed the skills to get better at policymaking, I hopped on board as that director on a board. Or when I noticed as well that there was room to contribute more at work, I always found a solution to offer. And so through those processes, I think the opportunities to lead showed up. And I think the other part of it too is I do want to give a shout out to the mentors, the sponsors, the peers in my life who also believed in me. Because I think it's important to have that person who believes in you, even when you think you don't even believe in yourself. And it's hard to say that out loud, but sometimes I do have those moments of pause. Can I do this? Can I succeed at this? And having someone to be that accountability partner, a mentor, a coach, or a sponsor really makes a difference.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, because I hire interns through my businesses, and I think the benefit for the business is, of course, we get some new creativity flowing. But there's a lot of loud people on social media that perhaps don't necessarily spend the time to build relationships with those who are a few levels ahead of them. And that sometimes can hold them back, right? I think having that balance of being creative and innovative and challenging the status quo while still respecting how and why decisions were made leads you to find those mentors, find those coaches, those sponsors that can really help elevate people. And I've certainly benefited from being mentored along the year in professionally, through the education system, et cetera.
Before you travel to the next question, I realize I didn't answer the second part of your question, which is around, I think you asked if I was an introvert or an extrovert, yes. Something like that. I would say I am an introvert who shows up as an extrovert. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just by nature of public speaking, you extrovert a lot. At the same time, once I'm done speaking, I absolutely enjoy having a moment to pick up a book and read or listen to a podcast or drink some tea and just relax and reflect. So I think there's a bit of a navigation there. I think over time, though, I think I've become a blend, I would say, of being extroverted in some circumstances and then introverted as needed.
Yeah, great. So you're going to recharge with some tea at home after a long day of facilitation and hosting sessions with a large group of people. I think most people would maybe align that way. While others, if you're stuck at a desk working for a period of time, you might need to get out and see lots of people because you've spent too much time. Okay, so Precious, you founded Impact Plus Consulting. What inspired you to start that? And what's an impact that you're most proud of that you've made so far?
Oh my goodness. So what inspired me to start Impact Plus and then an impact that I'm most proud of? I would say, for me, I never thought I was going to start a business, to be honest. I was going to be a human rights lawyer, as I mentioned earlier. What changed, though, was over time, I worked at some Fraser universities. I went back to SFU and I worked within the sort of student affairs world. And then I got introduced to this idea of co-creation. Really this idea that you can use things like Lego or creative tools to help solve problems, whether it was challenges that we're navigating, how do you get students more involved? The age-old questions that universities might ask. And in that process, I sort of realized that the skills that I had learned in leadership development, organizational change, and working with people, facilitation, could be transferred into a consultant setting. And so for me, it was really about creating a company or building a brand that really stood for something. And that's something being helping leaders think differently about how to go from strategy to execution. Oftentimes, it's not so much that teams don't have a great strategy. Sometimes the gap is in the execution. How do we communicate that strategy across the organization? How can leaders inspire trust and confidence with their teams so that they're excited to follow that mission, even though there's uncertainty? And then finally, how might we get people together so that they feel like they're part of that change or strategy? And so for me, what excited me the most was being that process person, the coach or the facilitator, that brought the teams together doing strategy retreats to say, how are you thinking about the strategy? What's getting in the way of your execution? And then what do you need to help you feel energized and excited to push this mission forward? And that was really it with starting Impact Plus Consulting. If you ask me what's an impact that I'm most proud of, oh, that's a hard one to pick. Perhaps I could go back to one of the stories where it was one of the very first projects that I got to work on. I think that just has a special place in my heart. I had worked on a project with my colleagues, my business, former business partner, and our teammates at the time at Impact Plus. And we had this audacious task to bring a team of folks, I think it was like over 600 of them, across different faculties at a public university. And they wanted to create the first ever strategic plan in about 40 years. It was online, it was during COVID. So there was that sense of lack of connection. And if you might remember, people also felt very tired online, not having that human connection to connect and amidst of all the uncertainties. the bottom line of what we achieved with that was we had over 95% agreement on the final strategy, which was a huge fit for this group. We had engaged, I would say, hundreds of stakeholders, I think over 600 stakeholders across different groups, whether it's your students, the staff, or your faculty. And then we also ended up winning a national award. Impact Plus won this national award in collaboration with the client at the University of Victoria. And it was for creativity and innovation in public and stakeholder engagement, which we're so excited for because it was the first project, and to win this award and have this recognition, I think wasn't it just a testament to the work that my team and the clients did. It was really a testament to the people who showed up in the strategy process to use their voice, to share what is it that they were looking for to cast that vision of the next 5 years and to be part of that change process.
Must have been a fun project to be able to collaborate and win at that early stage. So clearly there was some great chemistry.
It really was. And, you know, when I think back to it, there were times in the project where I felt like I had to pause a lot and listen a lot. And that's something I want to bring back here is when I think of the lessons learned from it, when it comes to speaking or communicating, speaking is so much about listening. And to be a great speaker, you have to be a great listener.
What misconception about leadership do you often find yourself correcting in others?
Ooh, you know what's interesting? I would say I often have to correct them in myself first before I can ever notice it in other people. You know, there's this classic saying that says, you know, there's one finger pointing outwards and four pointing back at you. I think that's very much, whenever I see something that's concerning, I think I'm probably doing the same thing too. And I would say one of the first things that I would often say that comes up, I think, I wouldn't say if it's a mistake per se. Sometimes it's this idea of maybe somebody else will deal with it. And maybe it's not a time yet for me to engage with it. And I've had to challenge myself with this question of why not me and why not now? And I think it's a kind of broad answer, but I think it applies to so many different things, whether it's addressing a social issue, whether it's working with your clients to be that financial advisor that they trust and they connect with. At some point, as leaders, we have to make that decision to say that I see a problem and I want to be part of the solution. And sometimes it's not for lack of goodwill. Sometimes it might just be feeling ready or equipped or prepared enough to take it on. And I see the same thing happen as well with public speaking as well. Most leaders and executives who I coach are often already confident in their expertise or their skills or their years of experience. What then happens is the question, am I ready to be a thought leader? Am I ready to put myself out there? Am I ready to take the backlash of people disagreeing with me? I think you and I have even talked about this too online. Before in person, where you share your opinion online and people might have a very different take on what you're thinking. And then it kind of feels like it's distracting from your mission and your purpose. I think in those moments, it's really important to go back to the why and ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I choosing to solve this problem? And grounding yourself in that purpose.
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing journey for all of us, right? And so, you know, whether you as the facilitator or some of the clients you're working with, you're constantly telling the world to own your voice and to get out there and speak your mind. What do you think holds most people back from actually getting out there and speaking their mind or leading?
Ooh, what holds people back from speaking their minds or leading? You know, there's so many different things that I've heard. I would just kind of paraphrase some of the comments that I've heard from leaders. I think one of it is, I don't think I'm ready. I doubt myself. Sometimes, not in every room, but in specific rooms. It might be a leader saying, you know, I've spoken up before, and it wasn't well received. And I've also heard leaders say, you know, I'm confident. However, I don't want to put myself out there. I think it's everybody else's thing to do that. And there's also some misconception that there's a black and white approach to it. There are people who are confident, who are meant to be out there, and then there are people who are not. And I'd love to sort of nudge and challenge that thinking as a coach and say, what about the in-between? With every single thing we do in life, there is always a reframe. I'll give an example. Whenever a leader says to me, I'm not comfortable speaking, I always say, what if you already are? What if the thing that you're afraid of is what you're most excited about? There's actually research that shows that oftentimes when a leader or speaker is afraid before a talk, and you're interpreting it as fear signals, what it actually really means is they're excited. And so the question is, when you think of that neuroscience of how we think and how we show up, what do you want to choose? The fear or the confidence? And confidence also comes from practice and taking action.
Okay, so let's talk a little about you're still building on your career success so far, Precious. Yeah. But if we had to look back at your experience from Nigeria to Canada, your life from a poet to an executive coach, what part of that journey has stayed the same or been consistent in your own value set?
I love that question. I would say what has stayed the same is this belief in the power of one's voice. I think that stayed the same. I'm still a poet today, which is exciting. So I even bring my poetry into coaching as well. Sometimes I sing in a coaching session, and I think that the voice is a toolbox, it's a soundbox that we can play with. What happens though is that we're sometimes rigid about how we use that voice. And not just voice in terms of singing voice or poetry voice, I think voice in terms of credibility, our authority as leaders in the positions that we have. Where are those spaces where we can use our credentials to help somebody else move forward? That's voice. You know, so I don't want to use voice as just sort of like the usual voice side of things, but I think voice could also be your experience. Where are those spaces at work where in you sharing your experience as a leader, it could really help somebody else feel seen, heard, and understood? I think the power of storytelling is that you can scale empathy, you can scale a connection, and then you can help other people see themselves as capable of being leaders too. So it's the multiplier effect. The more you lead, the more you use your voice, the more others lead and use their voices too.
Yeah, I love that. Great leaders inspire action, but they also create more leaders. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to make sure you're well-read on a subject, make sure you listen to others in the room, and then speak with authenticity and ideally share some stories that are going to resonate with people. So I've certainly learned that through many of my conversations with you and your support over the years. Now, you think about the work you're doing with Impact Plus and in your career, what's something that you hope anyone who engages with you will leave with?
Oh, what's something I hope they would leave with? I think it's just the very belief that using their voice is an act of service and it's an act of stewardship. There was something that Adam Grant had said, I think it was a few months back, and he said that sometimes we shy away from using our voice or sharing our thought leadership ideas because we feel like we're self-promoting. And for most of the leaders that I know work with, people are sometimes uncomfortable with promoting themselves. And he challenges us as leaders to reframe that from promoting yourself to promoting an idea. I think that there is power in stewarding an idea, a product or a service that can make a difference in one person's life. And so if you're that leader who's wondering, do I really want to put myself out there? Or even hire a coach, ask yourself, what is a gift, a skill, or an insight or experience that you have that you're hoarding or holding back? And because you're holding that back, it's a disservice to the team you work with, your community, or the world. I have a core belief that every single person has something to offer. And I do actually say this in my TEDx talk on how to network with confidence. And you can offer a lot with little. The key, though, is to believe that what you have is worth value to the people you're communicating with. And then secondly, that you have a responsibility to steward that idea so that it can make a difference in someone else's life.
Yeah, I love that. We really do each have our own autobiography. I think Santiar famously always promotes that, right? Make yours worth reading. But also give yourself the confidence to share that story and allow it to be heard. Because, you know, I think to some of my own experiences of father passing away and dynamics and how that's impacted my role as a financial advisor. And I openly share these stories because my hope is that I can push others to make better decisions than others that were close to me did. And the stories are far more impactful than, you know, this is this product or this is how this thing works. You know, the two sides of your brain, left or right, you know, which side do you want to talk to?
Thank you for sharing that, Brandon. I really want to just kind of touch on you kind of talking about your father passing away. I think the power in you even highlighting that right now is you've activated in the minds of the listeners the same emotional connection or feelings or moments that you experienced. It's been implanted as ideas in the minds of the people listening to the podcast. And what it says to them is that Brandon is human. He cares. He doesn't just talk about finance. He really cares about ensuring that there is lasting wealth through generations. And that story that you talked about your father is really what helps bridge that gap. And so I would say keep sharing stories, Brandon. I noticed that you've been doing so much of it, and it's also made a difference for me.
Thank you, Precious. You've inspired me to take action, so thank you for that. If anyone who's listening wants to connect with you or learn more about what you do, where's the best place for them to find you?
Well, I would say LinkedIn for sure. First of all, you can find me Precious Ile, I-L-E, that's my last name. On LinkedIn, I'm always posting articles or blogs or insights on leadership, communication, and public speaking. I also have my website, my speaker and coach website. It's preciousile.com. If anyone is interested in booking me as a speaker, an executive coach, or a facilitator, they're more than welcome to connect with me there. And one thing that's exciting as well is come January, I'm also launching the next cohort of our Speak to Lead program at Impact Plus. It's a 3-month high impact leadership program that helps leaders communicate with confidence, executive presence, and impact. So if you're thinking about 2026 in a new way, you want to level up your leadership, join me at Speak to Lead.
Love it. Well, Precious, thank you so much for being here, sharing some of your experience. I am blessed to have met you and get to build a relationship over, over a decade of our time together. And for everyone that's listening today, thank you. And please let us know what you think. Add us on LinkedIn or add some comments. Thanks for joining for the A-List, Precious.
Thank you for having me. And to everyone who's listening, thank you for joining us.